Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, Gompies, and welcome to 100% Hits Volume Pod, the podcast that looks at the greatest compilation series this country ever produced. My name is Josh Earle, and joining me this week, a return guest. Is this three times?
I'm going to say three times. Yeah. Once, twice, three times a lady.
You and Alexi, equal first now for the most times you've been on the podcast. Can you please welcome, it's Cameron James.
Yay. Hey, thanks for having me. Pleasure to be here. And I won't spoil anything yet, but I have seen the list of songs. And I think we're in for a pretty good time.
Now, the year is 1999. What's Cameron James doing in 99?
99, I'm in year six.
You're getting the bunker ready with all the canned goods. Y2K's coming. You're really panicked.
I was so scared about Y2K. Were you scared of it? I was really scared.
I wasn't scared of it, but I did think that something major was going to happen.
We all did, dude. I
was like 18. I had no money in the bank. I had nothing. I was like, this would be cool. We'll all start from scratch again.
I was like, it was a genuine fear that was going around. I remember like the millennium bug. There were news stories about it. Like everything's going to stop. Planes will fall from the sky.
That was the big one. Planes are going to just fall from the sky. I don't understand why.
Do you reckon there was anywhere in the world that did get affected by the millennium bug?
No.
Just like one computer?
maybe one toll booth somewhere. They went, oh no, we don't know how to get the boom gate up. Yeah.
Because it was like, I don't know if I'm misremembering this, but wasn't it they were saying because the shorthand of two digits for the year will roll back to 0 and 0.
Yeah.
It'll just somehow send us technologically back to like
the 1900s.
The 1900s somehow. It didn't really make sense.
But yeah, no sense. So you're year six in school.
Year six in school. Very big pop fan at this time. You know, I think we've talked about this in the past, but I didn't really know much rock or indie or alternative stuff until probably year seven.
Yeah.
When I started listening to Triple J, but up until then I was just strictly a top 40 dude. Like
were you playing music? Did your parents like get you guitar lessons or piano lessons or anything like that?
I had done some piano lessons and I started guitar lessons properly the year after.
Okay.
But my dad was a musician and so was my mum, actually. My dad played drums in a covers band and my mum played guitar and sang in the church band, which is good stuff. So rock and roll in the blood, obviously.
Hey, I reckon I've said this on the pod before, there's like, that's one of the good things about the church is you get an audience to sing in front of.
Yeah, very
true. So many artists in this country have come from Hillsong or Hillsong adjacent, kind of those mega churches.
Yeah, Gang of Youths, right? They were like almost a house band at Hillsong or something.
Yeah, and I think the Temper Trap also were of the members.
Wow, yeah. Sweet Disposition or whatever that song was called. Yeah. So we always had music blaring in the house. My dad was a big REM fan and my mum loved just all top 40 pop stuff. So yep. We always had the radio on, but it was commercial radio. It wasn't cool indie stuff. Yeah. So a lot of the songs on this half that we're going to listen to today are like, they are the soundtrack to this time of my life.
Right. Well, let's get into it. It's volume 27, the first half, side A. And we're going to start with a song that was everywhere in 98, 99. At the time, I wasn't a fan, but retroactively, quite like it. Here is Cher and their song Believe.
Mm.
glad we're giving it. I can feel something inside. The respect it deserves by not talking. I really don't think you're strong enough. That's all we can play. All right, so there, Cher, using autotune like she's T-Pain. Now,
yeah, was that your first experience with autotune?
Well, yes and no. It was, well, Daft Punk had been using it.
Oh, yeah.
And yep. Stardust, which is a Daft Punk offshoot, I think.
Yeah, what was the Stardust song?
Music Sounds Better With You.
Yes. That was it, That's right. It had the same animation style and the music video and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, so this was the first time, though, that autotune, I think, had got number one in America.
Far out.
Yeah, so this was the comeback smash. It's aged way better than I would have anticipated aging.
Totally.
Autotune, well, this, so the, we'll go through Autotune for a bit. So this is Cher's first number one hit in a quarter of a century.
Wow. That's crazy.
In America. In Australia, Turn Back Time got number one, but this didn't.
Oh, okay. Right,
in America,
right.
Got number three. So
that makes sense.
Autotune was invented by a flautist turned electrical engineer, a guy called Andy Hildebrand. And he invented it after a friend at a dinner party joked if he could make something that could help her sing in tune. So he went, oh, maybe I could actually do that. It was meant to be used sparingly, but for fun, he had a zero setting that made you sound like Cher does here, made you sound a bit robotic. This was only a year before Cher recorded Believe. And after this song, every update of the autotune on Pro Tools, it was just called the Cher Effect.
No kidding.
Yeah. So the producers of the song, Mark Taylor and Brian Rawling, they were brought in by at the bequest of Warner Brothers. The head of Warner Brothers was like, hey, Cher has a huge gay following. This is in the UK, by the way. Cher has a huge gay following. Do a disco record with her, a dance album. We just want to get that pink dollar, baby.
Yeah, you got to chase it if you can, you know.
Well, me and you can. We chase that pink dollar. We love that pink dollar.
We're screaming after the pink dollar. I'm sprinting after going, come on, come back.
So Cher was in the public eye because her ex-husband, Sonny Bono, died in a skiing accident the year before, I think, and spoke at his funeral. And she was everything Cher is. She was like funny, but she was also that kind of like wise kind of, is it wise or is it like, does it mean nothing? It's kind of, it's just intriguing. Yeah. I really dig Cher. Anyway, yeah. So Brian Higgins, we've talked about before. He's the producer. We talked about him when we talked about the band T-Shirt and their cover of Do You Think I'm Sexy or yep. You Sexy Thing. Because he and Miranda Cooper are now a production company called Xenomania. And he'd been working with Danny Minogue. So in a parallel universe, Danny Minogue could have had this song.
You know, it sounds Minogue-y, I think, because... And we've talked about how Kylie had a few like disco bangers in the 90s as well. And Kylie is probably chasing a similar market to Cher in many ways.
Yeah.
And it does sound like a Minogue type song, especially if you put it in the context of like Cher has been around since the 60s, I assume, and has this is a new vibe for her in many ways. It's definitely the first time that I remember being at least aware of autotune. I remember thinking like, oh, this is an odd sound on her voice. But was Bon Jovi, when was their song?
Whoa, that one.
Yeah, whoa. When was that? That
must have
been not long after this, I'd assume.
Yeah, after or maybe a little before. I don't know, yeah.
And then there was, recently I've been listening to ELO. And they have a bit of a robotic sounding voice in Mr. Blue Sky. I'd love to know what that is, if that's not autotune.
Well, I remember Foo Fighters had a song where Dave Grohl had the pipe in his mouth. Yeah. And he would do it live with the pipe in his mouth.
What is that thing?
I don't know.
I always see that thing in like, I think Bon Jovi, they had the pipe thing too. What the fuck is that?
I want the pipe. Give me that pipe. Give me that pink dollar. Give me that pipe.
Imagine doing a stand-up with the pipe in your mouth. Whatever that fucking thing is. Thanks for coming out, everybody.
So how Taylor and Rawlings, how they came about with the zero effect on the Cher vocal was they were just mucking about one night when they were in the studio on their own and put it as the zero effect and then we're playing with it. And then Cher came in and heard it. She apparently came in early and she went, I love this. And they went, oh, no, we better change it. And she said, over my dead body, you change that. If you change that, I'm walking. She actually said, don't let anyone touch this track. I'm going to rip your throat out. And for a while, they lied about the autotune. Said, no, they did it through a vocoder pedal. And then eventually they went, oh, no, no. It was just, yeah, we just did the easy autotune thing.
Okay, so vocoder is the other thing, which is sounds like autotune, but it's not.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but this,
yeah.
Yeah, this was, I don't know why people think autotune's a dirty thing. It's like, no, if it makes it sound, especially like this, people it makes it sound like another instrument. Man. It's great.
It is cool when it's used, I think, at its extremes like this. I think that obviously people use it to touch up vocal pitching.
Yeah.
And to me, I mean, I probably don't care that much, but for the purposes of this conversation, I'll say I think that is cheating. And I think that's like touching up an artist's, like, you know, right, canvas.
I used to think stuff like that was cheating as well, and now I don't. But because I used to think using a Ryman dictionary to write songs was cheating.
Mm, mm.
And I said that to singer-songwriter Darren Hanlon. And he said, no, it's not. That's just using your tools. Why wouldn't you? He goes, Stephen Merritt from the Magnetic Fields, he uses one. Why wouldn't you just use one to make it easier for yourself? I'm like, oh, yeah, why do I have these dumb rules in place that that's you don't true. Have to? It's like when people in comedy are like, as a musical comedian, like, oh, it's just a six-string clapping machine. It's just getting an easy laugh. It's like, yeah, but people are coming out to laugh. Like,
yeah, isn't that the point? Yeah, that's true. That's a good point.
This song got to number one in 23 countries, and it. I'm not the only one who's changed their tune on it as well.
Auto-tune.
Auto-tune. In 2007, Rolling Stone ranked it the 10th most annoying song of all time. And then 14 years later, they put it as the 337th greatest song of all time.
Yeah. Look, I'm with them. I think I'm also with you. I think you said at the start you were not a fan of this song when it was out.
Yeah.
I reckon I also would have found it to be annoying, but the older I get, the more I kind of love it.
Yeah.
It's and an there irresistible was, beat.
I forget, some band covered it on Like a Virgin on Triple J.
Oh, it was DMAs, I think.
Yeah, that's right. And yeah. And at the time I was like, oh, this is so lame. And then I listened to it. I'm like, actually, no, it's a nice pop song. It's got some good hooks. Some very good hooks, I should say. All right, moving on to another nice pop song. This went to number one in Australia. It's the first single from her debut album. This is Jennifer Page and Crush. It's got those Santana, Rob Thomas kind of feel to it. Yeah. Got to number three in the US, top 20 in 15 other countries, number one in Australia, New Zealand and Canada. And what I'm noticing with this, they're all the same countries when it comes to music, Cam.
Australia,
New Zealand, Canada, we like the same stuff.
I guess we are kind of all the same in the eyes of Americans.
Yeah, a little bit country, a little bit rock. That's what we like, a little bit pop, all that kind of stuff.
That's why we love Pink and the Foo Fighters.
Yes, it really is. So this made its debut on LA pop station Kiss FM, which we have here in this country, in 98. It was the station's most requested song and sold out its first pressing of 20,000 copies in a week.
They kidding.
Rumours are it was written about NSYNC member and the funniest name in pop, Joey Fatone, because it looks
serious?
Like yeah, it looks like it was it's Joey Fat One, because they were allegedly dating at the time.
Oh
now,
my god!
The allegedly is very important here, Cam.
Okay.
Because Joey Fatone, the Fat One, he was 21, Jennifer, 15.
Oh, brother. That ain't good. Joey.
Allegedly.
Joey, bad one.
Joey, not a good guy.
That's crazy. So this is like the "you're so vain" of our generation. It's just or the ironic, the Alanis Morissette's ironic.
David Coulier.
Yeah, this is the Dave Coulier. That's insane. I mean, this is so how old was she when this came out?
Like 16 when it came out, yeah.
Unbelievable. But
recorded when she was 15, yeah.
She's a child star. That's crazy. And did she like go on to do other things? This is the only song I know of hers.
This is really her only hit. The album the album didn't do well in the US, only got to 139. Even in Australia, where the song was double platinum, the album only got to 44. The follow-up album didn't chart. Apparently the record label didn't really believe in it. They kind of just kind of buried it, didn't do any press. And in 2003, she parted ways with the label. She's still kind of doing music. In 2012, she co-wrote a song for Smash Mouth. The song's called Magic. Their album was called Magic. And that charted number 22 on the adult Billboard charts, which is so funny that Smash Mouth are now considered the adult songs.
Yeah.
And in 2017, she released an album called Starflower, and that was supported through a Kickstarter, which raised $30,000. So she's got, you know, raising $30,000 is very, very good for a Kickstarter to get an album made. She also performed this song on Hey Hey It's Saturday. And I'm not going to lie, Cameron, I watched the episode last night she was on. Not the full, no, just this. But she does the song, then she does an interview at the desk.
Oh, wow. Daryl
Summers. Darryl. No, he was not hosting that night.
Oh, no kidding.
Larry Emder was the host. But don't think it was any less insane.
Why didn't they get Molly to interview the musicians, for God's sake?
I don't know.
He's right there.
Also, Red Simons, Wilbur Wilde, they could all host the show.
Get Ozzy the Ostrich to do the fucking interviews.
But it was that thing. So she's a teenager at the desk. They come over, they present her with a platinum plaque for album sales. She's got a microphone that she sang with in her hands, and then Dickie Knee just pops up and says, "You don't need the microphone, give it to me." And she kind of doesn't know what's going on, understandably.
Yeah.
Then John Blackman says some things, then some sound effects go off, then a video, like a cartoon pops up that she can't see, but the audience can. They all laugh. It's like, come on, guys. And I tweeted this morning, but if you watch ASA Date through the lens of it's like the Eric Andre show, the whole thing is just to fuck with the guests, it's really entertaining.
I actually think, I know we're on a sidetrack now about Hey Hey It's Saturday, but I think when it began, it was a chaotic, crazy show. That it started as a daytime show.
Yeah, and it was morning, just,
Yeah, it was a morning show and it was crazy and insane, had all these weird gimmicks. And then it became a nighttime show and then it just became mainstream. But I believe the idea of it was we're doing chaos. It is chaos.
Bring it back.
I agree.
Get Sam Campbell to host it.
Sounds good. Yeah. But that's crazy that it was such a big hit for her. I'm happy for her. It was a weird time in female-led pop, this point in the 90s where we're sort of between... You know, like a 80s star like Belinda Carlisle and the next, like the Britney Spears, Christina Aguilera generation. Like, I think, as we're going to find out on this playlist, a lot of these female-led pop stars are either R&B or singer-songwriter.
Yep.
Well, so to be someone like Jennifer Page, I guess, is an odd place to be because you're sort of neither of those things, really.
Yeah. Well, we had a lot of teens coming up on this album as well. We have another one now. She's 19 at this stage. This is Brandy and her number one US song, Have You Ever?
Understand Have you ever had someone steal your heart away? You give anything to make them feel the same. Have you ever searched for words to get you in the heart, but you don't know what to say and you don't know where to start? Have you ever loved somebody so much?
All right. There we go. That's Have You Ever. What do you think, Cam?
You know, I kind of love this style of R&B. I'm a bit of a sucker for it. And in the past, I think we've talked about a few. Was it En Vogue or?
Yeah, no, En Vogue's, yeah, one.
Yeah.
So I would have thought, without having done research, this was Babyface. His mitts were all over it, but he wasn't on this one.
Yeah, I don't think I even knew this song. I know Brandy from I Still Know What You Did Last Summer.
Yeah, that was just a year before this came out. So she was kind of riding high. She had that. She played Cinderella in a TV version starring Jason Alexander and Whoopi Goldberg.
Moesha, what a cast.
Yeah, I know. Moesha was her TV show that she was still involved with. Mm-hmm. She just had a number one song with Monica, The Boy Is Mine.
Yeah, I know The Boy Is Mine. Yeah. That's on a playlist of mine that gets regular rotation.
Yeah. So this song was written by a woman called Diane Warren, who has also written for the aforementioned Cher. She wrote If I Could Turn Back Time.
Yeah, Diane Warren's one of the greats, one of the great pop songwriters.
This year she'd also written I Don't Want to Miss a Thing by Aerosmith, or they released it.
I love that song.
She also wrote Blame It on the Rain by Milli Vanilli.
Yeah?
But didn't get cancelled for it. So those two dances got cancelled.
Yeah.
Never worked. I mean, they worked again, but it wasn't good. But
everyone didn't they try to put out an album just as the two of them singing?
Yeah. And then it didn't work. But the people behind it.
She wrote Rhythm of the Night as well.
Mm. Yeah. So this song, see, I have weird feelings with this song because technically it's perfect. You're like, she sings all the big notes. The production is flawless, but it just doesn't do anything for me. I don't believe. And I think because I know she's 19 years old and I'm like, you don't know what you're fucking talking about. I know someone else wrote this. Yeah.
I kind of always feel like that with these big, sappy, ballady songs that young stars do. I'm always like, no, you should only be allowed to do fun songs until you're like 35 and then you can pull out the My Heart Is Broken shit, you know? Yeah. Like, just do The Boy Is Mine for all of your career until you've gone through a heartbreak.
So this song got to number one in the US, but in a weird technicality, I'm learning about how their charts work. It didn't sell the most copies. It was number one for 2 weeks. Neither of those weeks it sold the most copies, but it went number one because it got a ton of radio play because it was a crossover hit between the R&B stations and the pop stations, which people didn't do. It was people very much stayed in their lane. And so it seems contrived by the label, which is smart. That's what you want your label doing. Going, hey, we want to make you the biggest star we can. And even in the with Brandy talking about singing the song, Diane Warren was like going, I'm going to give you some money notes in this song. Huh. And they're money notes that people hear them and they just want to pay for it. And you're going to make a lot of money off the back of this song.
What do you mean by that? Like there's such high notes that people are like, I need to hear that again. I'm paying for it.
Either hard notes to sing or just the big, big notes. And if you listen to it again, you'll see that she's hitting every note. In this song. Celine Dion does this as well. Just it's almost like I'm showing off. It's more like a maths problem than it's
virtuosic. Celine is a great example. Mariah Carey probably too, where you kind of go, this is what I'm paying for, someone to do this acrobatic shit for me.
Yeah.
That's fun.
Have you ever? All right, moving on.
Just before we do though, her brother Ray J is quite famous.
Yeah, I've seen his video.
Yeah, me too. Anyway, let's move on.
Moving on. Hey, this is the first time we get to talk about this band together. I've talked about them a fair bit in the past. Your fellow podcaster, Alexi, is a massive fan of this band. This is The Spice Girls, and this is Goodbye.
No.
play. That's enough. Okay. So this is their first song without Ginger.
I know. And by this point, I was out. I was in before this. When the Spice Girls first came about, 97?
Yep.
Yeah.
96, 97, yep.
It was like, I think this is the good thing about the primary school I went to. We weren't gendered when it came to the music that we liked. So all the boys in my year also loved the Spice Girls as much as the girls did at this point. Great. Maybe just because we were that, I don't know how old we would have been, like 10 or something. And so we all loved them. Like everyone in my year loved them. And when Ginger left, there was heartbreak that was, it united the boys and the girls in our year. We were all just so upset.
Who was your favorite Spice Girl?
Well, I wanted Baby. We all had to pick, you know, who your favorite
sicko.
Was.
Oh.
I know. She was older than me. I know she's the pedophilic one, but she was older than me, I swear to God. But I ended up getting someone in my year, this kid Pat was like, Baby's my favorite, so no one else can like Baby.
It's so funny.
And I was like, fuck, okay, so I guess I better like Posh. So I liked Posh. And
I
she
liked
was the one.
Posh. She was when people ask me who's your favorite Spice Girl, I used to say, yeah, Posh Spice.
Yeah. Why though?
I don't know.
She was like the least singery one of all of them, really. She didn't really do much. But I was the same as you. I don't know why I liked her. When I look back on them now, I think Mel B and Ginger are the better ones. They're like the most fun to watch and listen to.
Yeah, I think Mel C and Mel B, the two Mels, I think.
Mel C's got a great voice.
She's the best singer, but also her Mel B just seems somewhat unhinged, and I like that in a pop star.
Yeah, she's dangerous, which is cool. She's got kids with Eddie Murphy and
shit. She does.
Awesome.
On Piers Morgan, she said that her and Jerry had they had sex with each other.
Oh,
and then,
yeah.
And then Mel C was in the audience going, no, I don't think that happened. And then Jerry Halliwell said, this never happened. Mel B had to make an apology to her husband.
Oh, that's so funny. Yeah, we went and saw, I guess I would have been 11 or 12, for my birthday, I made my dad take me and a group of my friends, boys and girls, to go see the Spice Girls movie, Spice World.
Spice World, yeah.
And we all loved it. There was like 12 of us kids there and my dad. And about half an hour into the movie, my dad was just like, I can't fucking handle this. And he stood up and just left. He was like, oh, just wait outside. I can't. He just went and sat in the car and listened to Steely Dan or something while we loved the movie.
So this was a standalone single. It was kind of, they were working on it before Ginger had left, and then they ended up dedicating it to Jerry Halliwell. Even though it wasn't really written about her, but they went, oh, this makes sense. So it was released in 98, standalone single. It was their third Christmas number one in a row. The only band to ever accomplish that feat was the Beatles before them.
Wow.
It got to number one in New Zealand and Canada and three in Australia. A bit of difference there. Yeah. So
God.
This is how I did some research on Jerry leaving. So on the 31st of May, 1998, we're coming up to almost 25 years, she announced that she was leaving the Spice Girls through her solicitor. And she said, sadly, I would like to confirm that I have left the Spice Girls. This is because of differences between us. I'm sure the group will continue to be successful and I wish them all the best. And then she later went on to say it was exhaustion and she wanted to take a break. So she performed in Helsinki with the group a couple of nights before, which was also Mel B's birthday. And then apparently some altercation happened on the way home. And then they had an appearance on the National Lottery, which we talked to the TV show last week with Kwan. And they said, oh, Jerry's not feeling very well tonight, Mel C said. And get well soon, Jerry. And she pointed to the camera. And so even though she'd left, they were in denial about... they couldn't announce it yet.
Yeah.
And so Jerry went to her brother's house in France and they continued without her until they finally made the big call.
Did she end up coming back for the reunion
shows? she's in the reunions. The one who's hard to get now is Victoria Beckham.
Well, she's just like... Victoria Beckham, first of all, is not a singer.
No.
At all.
And she says, she admits that as well.
Yeah.
She said,
it's not an insult to her. She just isn't.
No. Well, she said that she watched Elton John do in concert, and he was doing songs from the 60s like he'd written them that day and was like really... And she goes, oh, I don't feel the passion like these musicians do.
Yeah.
It's not for me. Like, it's fun, but yeah.
Which is cool. Like, I think that's cool of her. And she's bigger than all of them as well. Like, she's just... She's an icon in her own way. So she doesn't need to be out there like pretending that she's Posh Spice anymore. She's Victoria Beckham, you know. She's very famous for being that.
Yep. She's famous for having the mic stand named after her.
I know. Have you ever done that joke? And do your audience know what that joke is?
For the listener, the audience, the joke is, and this happened a lot in the 90s and early 2000s, a comedian would take the mic off the stand and say, I'll just move Posh Spice out of the way, referring to her being very skinny. For a while it was, I'll move Ally McBeal. That was that was one.
Yeah.
Karen Carpenter, I'm sure, was used in the 80s and early 90s.
Twiggy.
Yeah.
In the 60s. Lenny Bruce would say, I'll just move Twiggy out of the way and shift the mic stand across. It's one of those like old school hack jokes that you sometimes still see. In my lifetime, I've seen it quite a bit.
I've been at a gig where two people I know use it and they still use it. And one was coming late and didn't know that the host, who was one who used it, had already used it at the start. And they went on and used the same joke. Guess what? Still got laughs. Still got laughs.
Well, it's undeniable. It's so funny that people still have to try and... Like, they're like, who? Posh Boy? Oh, yeah, I guess she was really skinny, famously, in the year 2001 or whatever.
All right. Moving on. Oh, this is... I can't believe we didn't talk about their first single. They didn't get the rights to it. But this is their second single. This is... Hey, speaking of Ray J, this is Bare Naked Ladies and their song, It's All Been Done. That's it.
Fuck yes.
You like that one?
I love it.
It sounds like the opening of a 90s sitcom.
That's what I love about Bare Naked Ladies. All their songs are just like perfect in 30 seconds.
Yep.
You got opening credits. There's the fat dad, the hot mom. You can picture all of them coming up on screen for it.
Yep.
It's almost like advertising jingles, the way that they write songs.
Yeah.
Well, perfectly catchy.
They did do the theme to Big Bang Theory. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's also... Actually, no, I don't like that one as much because that's too wordy for me. I like melodic shit.
Well, this is the second single. 1 week, I loved. I went out and bought that single, and it was a great single to buy because it had like four songs from their previous album, because in Australia, we didn't know the Bare Naked Ladies.
Yeah.
And so it had like If I Had $1 Million, Brian Wilson. It was great. Mm. And then 1 week with the... Chickadee China, the Chinese chicken.
The Chinese chicken.
It's been... Anyway, so this song got to number one in their homeland of Canada.
Mm.
Now, they began as a duo. They went to school together. They were different grades. And then they weren't friends until they met each other at a restaurant after a Peter Gabriel concert. They'd both been at the Peter Gabriel concert and went, oh, wow, you're into music. Then they went to the same music camp. Did you ever go to music camp?
No, I didn't. Did you?
No, never did.
I went to Cub Scouts camps.
I went to a maths camp. That was cool.
Okay, so we're both cool in different ways.
Yeah, both cool dudes. Anyway, and then they became a band because Stephen Page had an extra ticket to a Bob Dylan gig and asked Ed Robinson, the other member, if he'd like to join him. And then as they were waiting in for Bob to come on stage, they would make each other laugh by coming up with dumb band names. And one of them was Bare Naked Ladies. And so that's was they named their band after that little conversation.
It was a particularly like evocative band name when I was this age.
Yeah. Well, it's that thing of like, and there's a band in Melbourne called Private Function. They're a punk band, which is one of those names you're like, this is just so when you're written on the chalkboard, it says Friday night, Private Function.
It's like, yeah.
It's like there used to be the whole thing. If you name yourself Free Beer, you'll get lots of people there because they're like Friday, Free
Beer.
Yeah,
yeah.
This is the same thing. Friday night, Bare Naked Ladies. It's like, all right, cool.
Yeah.
So they started performing around their local town, and they made a demo and gave it to the comedy troupe Cork in the Juice Pigs. You know Cork in the Juice Pigs?
No.
They had a song called Only Gay Eskimo, which they came out.
Oh, yeah. I'm the only gay Eskimo. Yeah.
The only one I know. Yeah, anyway, the Juice Pigs got them opening for them, and to fill out their sound, they invited more friends from Bandcamp to join them. They also, Bare Naked Ladies, are in the club of being one of the bands who played at the Peach Pit After Dark, the club on Beverly Hills 90210, which I now realise is just any Warner Brothers band that needed a bit of a push.
That's amazing. That's so cool.
So 1 week was number one in the US for 1 week. And this is the most 90 sentence I'll ever read out loud. In 1999... the Bare Naked Ladies had a guest appearance on the TV show Two Guys, a Girl, and a Pizza Place.
Oh, shit. I used to love that show.
That was Ryan Reynolds.
Yeah, Ryan Reynolds. I was a sucker for, like, literally every American sitcom at this time. I loved all of them. And I thought they were all Seinfeld-level good. Like, I really did believe that.
Can I say, did you like Frasier?
Yeah, I liked Frasier.
See, Frasier was the only one I didn't like as a kid. I watched everything and I was like, I'm not into this one. Yeah.
I liked it and I don't think I even got it. I just kind of liked the interplay between them and I liked that, you know, they were talking fancy, I guess. I was at home being like, ha ha ha, they're fancy.
The one I really liked, Spin City.
I loved Spin City. Yeah. I rewatched it during COVID.
Does it hold up?
Yeah, fucking great. Except for when Charlie Sheen comes in and takes over. That's when you got to step out. You got to take a break.
So Bare Naked Ladies have some big fans. So in 2008, Paul McCartney was asked by a musician which bands he enjoys in the music scene. And his response was the Bare Naked Ladies. Their harmonies are right on.
Are you serious?
Yep. He said they could outsing any of us any day of the week. I don't think John and myself ever had that sort of range they do.
No way. This can't be real.
He said he would love to record with them in the future, and they never have. Bare Naked Ladies, get on the phone.
What? No way. This can't be real.
That is real.
Where'd this quote come from?
From the internet, Cameron.
Because this is like, this feels like, do you remember that urban legend that Paul McCartney... Someone asked Paul McCartney, well, there's that one.
Oh, the Crowded House one?
Yeah. Someone said, so what does it feel like to be the best songwriter in the world? And he allegedly said, I don't know, you'd have to ask Neil Finn.
Is that not true?
Apparently it's not true.
Oh, I've said it on this podcast before.
I've said it almost every day of my life since I heard it to anybody who'll listen. But I think it's not true. Someone asked him to clarify it a few years later and he said... I don't remember saying that, but he is a very good songwriter. Well, so he's complimenting him, but he's
I can confirm on this podcast that Marilyn Manson was the kid from the Wonder Years and he can suck his own dick because he had his ribs removed. I can confirm that.
But is this an example of that? Is this like some Bare Naked Ladies lore that's out there that's not true?
I'll have to wait until Paul McCartney's on the show to ask him.
I just can't imagine a world where Paul McCartney says that the Bare Naked Ladies are better singers than him and John Lennon. Doesn't make sense.
Well, he's talking about harmonies. Maybe they were. Maybe they hit their harmonies. All right. Oh, hey, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back.
Oh, sorry. Before we do, you didn't mention that David Duchovny is in the music in the video film clip. For this song.
Because they met at, I think it was either Jay Leno or Conan O'Brien.
Yeah, they met on Conan O'Brien and or something like that. And David Duchovny... apparently pitched to them, can I be on your next album playing the Egg Shakers?
Yeah.
And he was like miming doing Egg Shakers to them and they loved him so much. They were like, we got to get this guy in the music video.
The Duchov on the film clip. All right, let's take this break.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
And we're back. All right. Now, we have talked about her so much. This is the fourth single from the album, Come On Over, Shania Twain. Oh, come on. Grow up. Don't say it like that. we've talked about all four singles on the pod already. This is written by Shania and that dirty dog, Mutt Lange.
The Mutt.
This is From This Moment On.
From this moment, life has begun. From this moment, you are the one. Right beside you is where I belong. From this moment on, from this moment, I have been blessed. I live only for your happiness and for your love. I'd give my last breath from this moment on.
Okay, it's gonna get really big here, but we can't really play it.
I give my hand to you.
Technically, that's all we can play. Sorry, listeners. Mm. Yeah. Or you're welcome, listeners. So this was written during a soccer game in Italy. So Shania Twain was there with Mutt. And she said, my husband loves sports. I don't really know the game that well. So my mind drifted off and I just started writing in the stands. And she thought this would be a perfect song for fellow Canadian Celine Dion. But Mutt was like,
so Celine.
It does, doesn't it?
Yep. Yeah.
But Mutt was like, no, I think you should sing it and I think it should be a duet. So the initial copies of this, it was a duet with a guy called Brian White.
Hmm.
Initially, their first choice was Elton John. Couldn't get Elton. So, of course, Brian White's the next choice.
Yeah, of course. I mean, in the ranking of like iconic pop stars, it probably goes Elton John, Brian White.
So Brian White.
Then Mick Jagger, I guess. Yeah.
He's a country singer. He's a country singer, and Shania Twain, big fan of him, says not just one of the best country voices, one of the best voices, period. Okay.
Mm.
Then they did two versions, one as a duet, one as the solo. And the initial first pressings were of the album Come On Over. It was the duet. And then something happened. I don't know what happened. I think White's record company were like, hey, we're not a pop act. We're a country act. We don't want this in the pop charts. And so they took him off. Well, Warner Brothers, I think, or Mercury took him off and said, no, you just do it as a solo. And so then it was released as a single, as a solo act, a solo song for Shania, which must be weird. It's a weird thing for Brian to go, I was on this song and then they've just kind of cut me out.
And so in future pressings of the album, is he not?
He's not on there, yeah. So he's only in on the American version of it. Apparently on the international version he's just not there. So and he goes, they're releasing it as a pop record. I'm not a pop artist, so my feelings aren't hurt. But I reckon they would
be. Yeah, it's really, I mean, you talked about this earlier with like the R&B pop thing with Brandy and things were so binary in the 90s when it came to the charts. Like they really didn't like a crossover artist, it seemed.
No.
Whereas now that is literally the only way you can make a superstar is to have them be like essentially Taylor Swift or Drake or something where they exist across multiple charts.
Well, Lil Nas X is the perfect example of hip-hop and country.
So true.
Yeah. So this song got to number 2 in Australia. It was already in the top 50 for 11 weeks before it got to the peak of 2. The song that kept it off the top spot, The Goo Goo Dolls, Iris.
Another great song.
A great song, which we won't talk about on this podcast.
Why? No rights?
It's not on the this compilation. I think it's on Pod Machine though. So go over there, Patreon. It was the 10th highest selling single of 1998 in Australia, even though it didn't get to number one.
Shit. I feel like I don't even really remember hearing it that often. I know this song really well, but I don't remember hearing it played that much out here.
I reckon you weren't going to weddings in 1999. I reckon this was the perfect wedding song.
That's probably true. It's a shame that the Dirty Dog, Mutt, did what he did because they really wrote some good songs together, I think.
Yeah. All right, let's move on. This is, we're kind of sticking country.
Yeah.
This is Faith Hill and her big hit in Australia, This Kiss.
I don't want another heartbreak, I don't need another turn to cry, no, I don't want to learn the hard way, baby hello, oh no, goodbye, but you got me like a rocket, shooting straight across the sky, it's the way you love me, it's a feeling like this, it's centrifugal motion, it's perpetual bliss, it's that pivotal moment, it's
another
this kiss, unstoppable. This kiss.
I love a song that gets to the chorus within 30 seconds, especially for this podcast.
Oh, so good.
It's really good.
Pop songwriters, take note. Get to that chorus ASAP. Get it in our heads.
Yeah.
And you know what? Include the phrase centrifugal motion if you can. If you can get that into a pop song, you've done your job.
So this got to number four in Australia, top 10 in the US, was nominated for 2 Grammys, one for Best Female Country Vocals and Best Country Song, lost both of them to the previously mentioned Shania Twain, her song You're Still the One. But don't worry, she'd win a Grammy later in her career for songs we will absolutely talk about on this podcast coming up. So stay tuned, about 8 weeks.
That's a good hook for future episodes.
Faith Hill started performing in church fairs and rodeos in her early teens, and she was inspired to sing after seeing Elvis Presley at age 9.
She went
to an Elvis gig.
At 9 years old?
At 9 years old.
Oh my God, her parents were animals. They're letting her see those gyrating hips.
Elvis, the pelvis. Okay, so at 19, she quit school to move to Nashville. To pursue her dream of being a country singer. And she auditioned to be a backup singer for Reba McEntire.
God, I love Reba too. I love country pop so much. Well, especially female-led country pop. I fucking love it.
She didn't get the job, which was lucky. Because a few years later, after auditioning, Reba McEntire's entire band were killed in a plane crash.
Jesus Christ.
Reba wasn't on the plane. So Faith Hill could have been on that flight.
Makes you think, doesn't it? Almost like Reba had something to do with it, perhaps.
So she got a job working at a music publishing company, and she was in there one day singing when a coworker heard her sing and encouraged her to do a demo. And I think we've had another performer on this podcast who had the same thing. She was like wanting to be a singer, so got a job in the publishing company and then would just sing around the office. There must be so many people who just get jobs and they go, I'm just going to sing around here.
Well, that's how I got into comedy. I got a job in comedy music, comedy publishing, and I was just doing jokes around the water cooler, doing knock knocks in the staff room.
So she married the executive of that company, a guy called Daniel Hill. But then she divorced in 94 after she signed her record contract. They got divorced straight away.
Okay, Faith, I see what's going on here.
You
know what? Do what you got to do, I guess.
Yeah. She has had success throughout from like 94. She was like big on the country charts. Then this is her first crossover hit. And then she's continued. because she's now in the Yellowstone spin-off, 1883.
Oh, that's right. She's too with Sam Elliott, I think, and a couple of
the other country guys.
Is it Tim McGraw or someone?
Well, that's her husband, yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, so she's technically now Faith McGraw, but she still performs under Faith Hill.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I haven't watched that Yellowstone spin-off, but I'm like, I could see myself really getting into it because there's just something about the older I get. Actually, I believe it was Justin Hamilton said this to me. He said, once you get into your 30s, you either start veering towards jazz or country.
Yeah.
And I've fully gone country.
I'm the same. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You can't help it. There's just something very simple about it and very fun and it's catchy and the emotions are right on the surface.
That's it. I believe these country singers.
Yeah, I believe them.
Yeah. All right. We're going to move on. Someone else, I believe. This is another song from The Velvet Rope, the horniest CD about depression ever. This is the sixth single from the album. This is Every Time by Janet Jackson. Oh. That piano line reminds me of Go West, the King of Wishful Thinking.
Get over you.
Yeah.
I know I will.
See, I told you.
It's exactly the same melody.
It also, I don't know what it is about it. It has a little bit of a feel of, this is my favorite Sesame Street song, which is I Don't Want to Live on the Moon by Ernie.
Yeah.
And it's this kind of like, she's very restrained in this song.
Mm.
Like, she has the pipes to belt this out. But it's really nice that it's more understated. Whereas give to someone like Brandy and you know that Brandy's going to try and hit all the notes and like make it as big as possible. But I think Janet Jackson is like, no, this song is kind of me being a bit fragile.
Holding it back a little bit. She sounds, it's the most she sounded like Michael, I think, actually. As far as like when Michael does these sorts of ballads. I don't know if I'm a big Janet fan. I just don't think, I don't remember her songs being like in the charts when I was younger. I just know who she is.
Buddy, go and listen to The Velvet Rope. It is. If you like R&B, it is a classic. It is so good.
Well, you're saying that this is the sixth single, so there must have been so many fucking hits on it.
Yeah, the sixth single. At the time, she was the highest paid artist ever. She was paid $80 million. Madonna and her brother Michael were only paid $60 million for their album contracts. But that didn't make her happy. She was very depressed in this part of her life. I think there's a whole documentary about her that everyone should watch. It's called Janet. It's great. But the Velvet Rope is like, it is a very good album. I said it last time we talked about it that like, I didn't listen to it in 97, 98. I've only listened to it off the back of doing this podcast. And I'm like, oh, it's a classic for a reason. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, so this single, it didn't really do anything in the charts, but I think that's because it was the sixth single and it was released 14 months after the album came out. So everyone who was a Janet fan already had the album. Hmm. The only country where it did well was in Iceland, where it got to number 5. The film clip holds up. It's Janet naked in a pool. And I'm going to say something controversial here, Cam. Mm-hmm. She's hot.
So, am I crazy, or is this famously beautiful woman hot?
Even with a lower back tattoo, she's hot.
It's funny when you get to a point in your life where you look back at people that were really famous when you were a kid and you go, huh, okay. Hey, it turns out they were really hot the entire time and I didn't really clock it. Interesting.
Yeah. There's no more I can say about Janet. I've talked about her so much on the show. Like, I think this is the fourth or fifth time, but yeah. Anyway, we'll move on because it kind of fits in with this next one. This is the Thinking Man Spice Girls. This is All Saints and their song, Booty Call. Speaking of booties.
Bring it on, 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 never stop giving good love, cause that's what I call you for. Never stop, baby, give it up, cause I know where it came from, you got more. I like playing games, and if it's all the same, you can bring it on with the rough stuff, and give me your love, I don't wanna be tamed. I need a man to be a real man, you know what I got in store. Always finish what you stop, baby, and always having me beg for more. You know I wanna be deep down, boy, but I don't get a in your wallet. It's just a booty call.
Bring it on, bring it, bring it on, 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 bring it on.
You're horny now?
Not really. I can't explain why, but there's something so fucking boring about All Saints. I can't even explain it.
No, I'll stand. Never ever. It's a great song.
Yeah, it is a good song.
I don't remember this song at all.
Me neither. Is this a psyop? Are we being tricked?
Well, this got to number one in the UK. It was the third straight number one. Written by cargo-panted Shaznay Lewis.
Yeah.
We've talked about the formation of the band. We've talked about Shaznay writing. Was hot. We talked about her getting kicked out of the band and then they got signed and they went, no, you've got to bring her back in. She writes the songs. We've talked about their fights with the Spice Girls. Now I'm going to talk about some of the tabloid stuff.
Please.
In particular, the Appleton sisters.
Yeah.
So, Nicole Appleton. They're born in Canada. They moved to the UK to start their music career. She was married to Liam Gallagher.
Huh.
They have a son together called Gene. And she's the inspiration for the Oasis song. The first song that Liam wrote for the band, Songbird.
No kidding.
Yeah, and this is a song that Noel describes, even today when they don't even speak to each other, as a perfect song.
I love that he gives it up to his brother every now and then.
Yeah, but because it's Noel, he couldn't just leave it as a compliment. He also added that Liam decided to write a song about his bird and states the title, Songbird, in a caveman-like manner.
great.
But Nicole and Liam, no longer married. They got divorced when the press leaked that Liam was expecting a child with a journalist who was a New York Times journalist. So, yeah.
Can't compete with that.
No. Natalie, the older Appleton sister, she married Liam Hallett from The Prodigy. So for a while there,
shit.
Christmas lunch... The Prodigy, Oasis, All Saints. Yep.
Oh, wow.
But her first marriage was to a guy called Carl Robinson, who was a stripper in a group called The Dream Boys, who she met after seeing him perform when she was only 17. He was not a teenager. They had a kid together, but the marriage was annulled within 2 years. So I don't know how that you can annul a marriage when you've...
When you have a child.
When you have a child. It's not like it was like a mistake. I don't know. I don't know. If you're a marriage lawyer, is that a thing? I don't know.
If you're an annulment specialist?
Expert,
yeah, specialist. Let us know. Like, can you? Because I thought the whole point of an annulment is you have to prove you never consummated.
That's what I thought. Or it was like, yeah, it was a sham marriage.
Mm.
But yeah, I don't know. So booty calls. I've never had a booty call.
Me neither.
Yeah.
I'm in a long-term relationship, and maybe that I've had a booty call, but with the woman who is now my wife.
Yeah.
And no one wants to hear about that.
This is the thing. So I'm the same. I'm a long-term monogamist.
Mm.
Me and my wife were invited round to friends of ours, and they'd been trying to plan this for a while, and they said, and it will just be us, just be the adults. And I'm like, all right, cool. Like, we'll try and find someone to look after the kids for the night. And that was because they wanted to tell us that the guy, he just wanted to tell us he was bisexual. Hmm. And I was like, okay, so what's this mean? And they're like, oh, no, we're still going to be monogamous. I'm like going, you don't need to tell. I didn't say this, of course. I was very supportive. But I'm like, you don't need to tell us this. It yeah. sounds like you got caught looking at something on like YouPorn and have to explain it. It's like,
now you have to invite the friends around yeah. and explain everything.
But it was like, I couldn't wait to get back in the car and drive home.
Well, it's just essentially he's saying like, hey, I'm just letting you know, here's what I jerk off to. I was like, okay, cool. I'm happy for you. But also, did you need to tell me that? I mean,
yeah.
Yeah, cool. I'm happy. I'm glad you're coming hard. But my God, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I find that like the older I get, the one thing I miss out on conversationally is that I never get to tell stories about random hookups or one night stands or booty calls because, yeah, as I said, I have those stories, but they are all about Alex, my wife.
Yeah.
And everyone knows her. So it's too weird to start bringing that shit up.
Yep. Gross. All right. Our final song. Now, I had this as a single. This is, I'll talk about it after we play it. This is Paul McDermott, Fiona Horn of Def FX, and their song, Shut Up, Kiss Me.
I was caught by your smile under a blushing moon. You were the only one left there, and words poured like wine over an open wound. You were the only one left there, with sky born blue gray eyes, sky born blue gray eyes. Pale light falls over a broken bed. You were the only one left there. Cold hands in mine, lips bruised and black. You were the only one left there, with sky born blue.
There you go. That's the song.
Tell me tell me why this song exists.
Sorry.
Do you know what I mean? Like, what's the point
of
Cam, this?
A lot of singers want to be comedians, and yeah. a lot of comedians want to be musicians. And I think that is why this song exists. So, look, Paul is a creative guy. Mm. He's a comedian, he's a musician, he's a painter, he's a novelist. Mm. Like, I think he was just doing stuff that he wanted to do. Hmm. And I, look, full credit, that's great. I'm the same. I do stand-up. I also do kids shows. I do podcasts. I have my own serious songs that I don't put out there as well. I write them. This is how big he was, though, that he could do this. And people go, yeah. But I was one of these fans. I was obsessed with Paul McDermott yeah. in year 11, year 12, which is when, yeah. so 99, so 98 when this, I think, came out, 99 when this year, obsessed with the Doug Anthony All-Stars who had broken up. Paul yeah. McDermott, like, I had watched every Doug Anthony All-Stars video. I watched Das Kapital, their TV show. I would watch Good News Week every week,
yeah.
tape it, and rewatch it. Like, just upset. Clearly, he influenced my comedy career. Like, even when I got the job hosting Spicks and Specs, my ex-girlfriend, who knew me at this time, sent me a message saying, your transition into being Paul McDermott is almost complete. I had not thought about this song in 15, 20 years.
Sure.
It got to number 48 on the charts. Paul Mack is on the piano. And I'm with you.
Oh, Paul Mack's on the piano?
Paul Mack is doing this.
What the hell is going on?
It is just, it was put out by the ABC. So apparently he performed it. They used to do Good News Weekend. That turns into Good News. Like, and at the end of it, he would do a song. He had Throw Your Arms Around Me, that Hundreds of Collectors song that got to 31 in the Hottest 100 of 98.
Yeah, I remember that.
That's how big he was. Okay, and then he'd do this. Apparently he had a show called Mosh that he did a whole bunch of serious songs in.
Oh, my God.
But this,
it's so strange because you're listening to it. The title sounds like it's going to be a comedy song of some manner, like Shut Up and Kiss Me, right? Or Shut Up, Kiss Me. And the build-up of that first verse makes you think, because it's so sincere and so earnest, that if you're a comedy fan and a musical comedy fan like we are, you're expecting the rug to be pulled out at any second and a big comedy chorus is coming. But then the chorus hits and guess what? It's even more earnest.
So he performed this on Good News Week. Now, you're on the panel of Good News Week. You're the comedian. You've gone like, all right, we're doing this show. Funny, 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 giving shit, biting kind of satirical humor.
Yeah.
We're at the end now. I'm going to go do a very earnest song.
It's insane.
Like, I know this is a weird podcast for eye contact when I play ballads. I don't know where to look. On the panel of that. And also, part of me goes, you know what? Say my stint on Spicks and Specs was a hit. Say we're now, this was 10 years ago, and we're now 10 seasons in. Would I have been the type of person to go, hey, I'm going to do a serious song to close the show? Can you imagine?
You might have, man. I think that's what happens if you get big enough.
Yeah.
You start thinking, well, I guess everyone wants to hear everything that comes out of my brain. And you start doing this stuff. It's like, I mean, I don't want to throw any comedian under the bus because we love them all. They're our family. It's a brotherhood and a sisterhood. But the guy from Flight of the Conchords, Brett, has a serious album. And I think he's a great songwriter, but I also think that was a huge mistake
to
put out a serious album. Like, just do it for yourself like you do. I do it too, you know. I'm not showing anyone.
Yeah.
Like, do it for yourself and then repurpose those melodies into comedy songs for Muppets to sing, you know, fucking a new Muppet movie, for God's sake. It's insane that Paul McDermott did this. Because he has a nice voice, but it's not nice enough to be a pop star, you know? Like, it's comedy nice. And I can't believe it's on this compilation. It doesn't make sense to me that it's on here.
It's crazy it's on here. Because it was produced by the ABC. So it wasn't even like a Warner Brothers or Polydor kind of thing. It was obviously some subsidiary, but yeah. Thanks, Paul and Fiona. Good job.
All right, you guys.
That's the end of... That's the end of the compilation. So let's go through them and we'll vote. You decide, hit or not hit.
Definitely.
Okay, Believe by Cher.
It's a hit.
Crush by Jennifer Page.
Hit.
Have You Ever by Brandy.
Not a hit.
Goodbye, The Spice Girls.
Not a hit.
It's All Been Done, Bare Naked Ladies.
Hit.
From This Moment On, Shania Twain.
Hit.
This Kiss, Faith Hill.
Hit.
Every Time by Janet Jackson.
Not a hit.
Booty Call by All Saints.
Not a hit.
And Paul McDermott, Fiona Horn, Shut Up, Kiss Me.
Absolutely not a hit. I'm so sorry, Paul McDermott. I'm so sorry.
We have 50% hits.
Yeah, it's not bad.
It's pretty good. I mean, the highs are very high.
Yeah, the highs are huge. It's really hard to top it's really hard to top Shania, really.
And the lows aren't that low. I should point out, like, of all the compilations, the lows are pretty standard. It's nothing I'm like going, this is the worst song I've ever heard. It's all fine.
No way.
Well, thank you for doing this, Cam.
Thanks for having me. That was so fun. I was so excited when I saw this list of songs because I just love 50% of them so much.
Yeah. It is a good list. Hey, you've got some shows in the Brisbane Comedy Festival.
That's right. Yeah. May 27 and 28 in Brisbane at the Powerhouse Theatre. I'm doing my show Electric Dreams. It's the show I toured around last year. I'm just doing an encore of it. So if you're in Brisbane or the surrounding areas of the River City, come on the 27th and 28th and come check out the show. It's all about music, actually. The whole show is about the music that I wrote when I was a teenager.
You might even hear some songs that similar to Shut Up, Kiss Me.
You absolutely might. Do you know what? Maybe that's why it irked me so much, because I just can relate so hard to being a goofy, funny person who tries to write something sincere. Ugh.
And also your pods, Becky and Cam Hotline.
Yep. Yeah, I've got a podcast with Becky Lucas and Alexi Toliopoulos and I have a podcast. Well, I'll plug Finding Yeezers and Finding Drago and Desperado. Yep. They're the things that we make together. So check them out if you're interested.
Hey, thanks everyone on the Patreon. If you're not on Patreon, you would have heard last week's episode with Kwan Yeomans, the full unedited version. We got into some little industry goss that only the Patreon subscribers heard, plus the Pod Machine episodes. So go to patreon.com/DYKWIA. You guys are the absolute best. Thank you, Cam. I'll see you next time. Bye.
Thank you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.